The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of The Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike, brought to you by U.S. Christian Chamber National Conference and Expo. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Hey, friends, and welcome back to Afternoons with Mike here on the Shepherd Radio Network. I am very privileged and very excited about today's program. I took a trip to Haiti a number of years ago, and it was a missions trip that I can honestly tell you, it changed my life in many different ways. It gave me a heart for missions. It gave me a new love for the Haitians in particular. And I believe it opened my eyes in a way that they had never been opened before to the fact that the need is so great in this island nation, and yet we in America are so blessed. And the difference, the gap between those two areas so close together in geography was shocking to me. So I have as my guest today someone that would hail from Haiti, Dr. Idla Benome. Is here, and he is a doctor of physical therapy, and he's a massage therapist. He's working out of Central Florida and in the Orlando area, and he is my guest today on the program, and it's just a real joy to have you here. Welcome.
Thank you. Merci, et ma bien bonsoir avec Mike et à tout mon captain de nous. Welcome. Thank you, Mike. And thank you to all the listeners.
You know, I was trained when I was there to say, bonjour, monsieur, comment ça va? I don't know how bad that is.
Ça va bien, merci. Yeah, bien. Et toi?
Okay, you have now exhausted my entire understanding of Creole, but that is it. And I'm glad that you're here. To tell us a little bit about yourself, your story. Did you grow up in an area with a family that loved the Lord, or did that come later on in your life?
Well, thank you again for the opportunity. As far as myself, yes, I grew up at a, I guess, Christian family that was raised in the church. Earlier on, my family were Catholics and then converted to Protestant at a young age.
Mm-hmm.
So I grew up in the church, understanding the principles, the value of faith and belief. So as I got older, I developed that appreciation, a better understanding mm-hmm. of the Lord.
That happens to everybody.
Yes. Yeah. But earlier on, I grew up in a church family.
That's really a blessing to have that as a heritage, isn't it?
It is. It is. It's a good foundation. Mm-hmm. For me, I think as I grew up and now to who I am now, that belief, that faith has a lot to do with my ability and capability, if you will.
Now, when you were born in Haiti as well, right?
I was born in Haiti. I was born in Haiti and began traveling at the age of 5 or 6. My dad lived in the U.S. at the time. So my sister and I, we come and spend the summers. And eventually he got tough. He says, you know what? Enough is enough. You guys are staying put. Mm-hmm. So then he petitioned for us and we became here at the age of eight.
Okay. So the first here. 8 years you split time or all but the summers in Haiti. And then at age eight, you become a U.S. resident, and ultimately a citizen, right?
Correct.
Yeah. And so you could say that you had enough memory of those early years still that that's a rich heritage for you to see what's going on in Haiti.
It is.
You remember a lot.
I do. I do. And people are surprised to this day too, for the passion that I still have for Haiti. And they're wondering, you know, I left Haiti at such a young age and I was raised here, but yet I'm still connected and I'm still involved. So thanks to my parents, we grew up in a Haitian household as far as speaking the language and understanding the culture. So that never left me, and I'm very appreciative for that.
Now, you speak English very well. Did your dad speak English as well then?
He speaks English, but...
But not as well.
Okay,
I get it.
But he speaks English, yes.
Yeah, that's great. Now, when you were there, what year would this have been when you made the move?
1984, 85.
Okay.
I remember it clearly. I think it was 86 we were there.
Baby Doc would have already been out, right?
Right. Right after he left.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Now, when I was there, he was still very much in control.
Control.
I was there in 1979.
Wow.
That's when it was.
I was still a little baby.
That's right. Almost. You know, and you're from the area, not terribly far from, I guess you would say, north of Port-au-Prince, right?
North side of Haiti, which is Gonaive. That's where I was raised, but was born in the province, the countryside of Haiti, a small place called Bassin.
Mm-hmm. Now, describe, if you will, for our listeners, what the environment would have been like when you were young and what you remember living with. What was that like?
I still remember it vividly. Kids running around. You know, at that time, we used to have, we make cars outside running around, playing karate, in the lawns, going to springs, and basically enjoying life with your family and friends. And so it was memorable. And I can remember the officers at that time with the brown suits walking up and down the streets, monitoring, policing, if you will. Also, what we call the Tontomakut, the police with the blue vest walking around, also monitoring, providing security, if you will. Mm-hmm. So there was a fear of not misbehaving. So everyone is polite, cordial, walking around, a sense of security, if you will. That I remembered at that age.
Now that was it's like a palace authority that we encountered ourselves when we were there. We were doing videotape. I was doing a documentary for a church and a ministry that had a ministry there in Haiti. Mm-hmm. And so we were doing the documentary to raise funds back in America about the needs. But we were at the Iron Market in Port-au-Prince.
Machife.
Yeah. And we're there and walking around and just doing basically what in the TV business, it'd be called B-roll. It was just no talking, just kind of like capturing scenes that would be used in cutaway things in the documentary and things like that. And while I'm shooting this B-roll, two well-dressed, very well clear-speaking people, and speaking in English, which we had not seen a lot of that, they came up to us and they said, you must go with us. And then they identified who they were. And I'm thinking, I'm just about ready to get arrested here. And they were actually part of the palace police.
Okay.
The guard unit. Well, I don't know what their title was. And the fellow that was with me understood, I wouldn't have known it, but he understood what to do. And he basically asked for their names.
Okay.
And when he asked for their names, they didn't want to give their names. And then when he insisted, he said, well, the reason I want to know is that my father is a consulate and I want to be able to tell them who it was that took us down to the station.
Correct.
And they said, oh, you're fine. You're fine. Just go ahead. Have a nice day. And that was the end of that.
The end of it.
And I thought, I just escaped a rat infested prison in Haiti. That's what I thought. And I was grateful. I was grateful that happened. The area of where you are, where you were, that's not far from Ibo Beach, right?
Ibo Beach. No, I think that is more in the south.
But, okay.
But as you travel through the, I guess, Nacionado National Road, yes, you cross that area. That
you region. Mentioned all the beautiful springs that are there, right. And this particular beach is that we went to, I think that's the name, but it was gorgeous, and it was a full, I mean, they had a full coral reef, and it's just like a paradise.
Well, Haiti has, coastal lines throughout the island.
Right.
Many undiscovered or, I guess, uninhabited, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
But the countrymen who goes out there and enjoy the nature. So when we travel or when we, say, tourists go, there's a lot that's not viewed, or unless they meet some of the locals and understand where to go and really discover the richness, the natural of the country, the island, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, throughout the island of Haiti, the coastal land, some of the south, some of the north as well, there's beauties that have not been discovered, that have not been shown to the world, except the locals who are there knows about it, but it's not commercialized as well.
Yeah, you know, it's being called, even to this day, the closest thing to a third world country that in our hemisphere that we have. And so the sites that you see, it was this mismatch, and I'm sure you know what I'm talking about, a mismatch of some of the most idyllic, gorgeous scenery that one could ever see. But right next to it is a level of poverty that is mind-numbing.
So I would say that Haiti is not the poorest country in the hemisphere. It may be poorest in industry developed, but there is much richness to that island.
Beautiful.
If it is, the poorest, but yet why are so many still invested or wanting to go or going? So what are they doing? Why are they going to the poorest country? So yeah. I say it is one of the richest country, maybe undeveloped, untapped in terms of natural resources or in terms of industry. So we asking, why not assist and help develop those industries? So then it's no longer become the richest because the resources are there.
The resources are there. And there are the people that live there are some of the hardest working people in the world and some of the sweetest people as well. I absolutely loved my experience there. And we have friends that still have an outreach ministry in Cap Haitian, which would be all the way, of course, in the north part of the island, way far away from Port-au-Prince.
Yes.
This is that area would be not that far from a spot that many people on cruise lines would visit, and they don't even realize it's Haiti because they don't use the word Haiti.
Labadie.
That's right. Labadie. And it is a gorgeous, gorgeous area with a big old slide, a zip line that is just unmatched.
Now, although I have not been to Labadie, but understanding, yes, it is part of Haiti. I guess I would say caption out, if you will. But again, that could be a perfect example as well, just to be able to develop or maximize the opportunities that are there to assist the Haitian people, to assist the country. But the industries are there. It's, again, how do we help or how do we change the culture, the narrative by utilizing the resources that are on the ground and facilitate the Haitian people to participate and develop and get out of the quote-unquote poverty.
Yeah, the poverty, the circle of poverty that so many of them live in. And they are really, really fighting, a lot of them, especially in the rural areas. But of recent years, now this was not true when I was there in 79. There was not a danger level like it is now with kidnapping and just gangs that are going on. In the news recently has been a horrific kidnapping, and apparently maybe even people lost their lives.
Right.
When you go back or when you are watching what's happening right now, what would you say would be the reason that since the dictator is gone, yet now it seems like it's so much more dangerous?
Well, I think times are different. Of course, there's we need better leadership within the government, within the country themselves. Now, when you have a population as well, too, where most of the educated also leaves the country. So those who have the capability to lead and govern, or at least to lead the country, are not there. So you have a gap and level of education, if you will, because of this particular phenomenon. But at the same time, too, yes, there is corruption. So how can that be eradicated? And the call that is at hand, as we have people like myself or others who are living here, who have lived here, who have developed, or those other Haitians here as well, and local government here that are running, operating efficiently here, but they want to take part and want to give back at home as well, that are asking for those opportunities so they can go ahead and also contribute and help where they're helping here to be able to help at home. So then that cycle can change. So there's a lot of gaps and steps that needs to take in place. But at the same time, at the core, yes, as Haitian people as well in the country, there has to be a mindset. There has to be a decision made. Okay, we no longer want to do this. So sacrifice. We have to sacrifice and take it on our own with the help.
Now, of course, Haiti was hit hard with that hurricane. I'm sorry, with the earthquake first. And then they hitting it with hurricanes. That's not an uncommon thing. They've taken a lot of hits.
Regular.
But this last year, it's been another year that of difficulty for them because of the natural disasters.
Yes. And that comes again too, when we have also lack of leadership or regulations being reinforced, and all those rules are there. So then, with the cutting down the trees, deforestation, and over the long time period, that's the result. So when you have rains and flood that happen, there's nothing to help slow the onslaught. So then you have human lives that are lost, if you will.
Now, I remember hearing that the word Haiti means mountains. I think that's correct.
Mountains, yes.
Yeah. And I was shocked when I was there at the mountains that are on that island. It's almost bizarre. It's not that large when you think of landmass of the United States compared to Haiti. It's Haiti is minuscule compared to that, right. But the mountains are magnificent.
Huge. Yes, yes. And those are mountains of prayers too, especially when you go to the countryside. That's one of the... So growing up, when they would take mission or do mission trips, they would go to the mountainside, a group of 10, 20 different locals from the churches goes and just go on the mountaintop and do mission works and praise.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it's the beauty that we have. And it's a beauty, but because of, I say, the deforestation as well, too, then it becomes, I guess, I don't want to say facilitated catastrophe, but also when you have those rainy seasons or whatnot.
And you've got a big area to slide.
Yes.
There's a big area to have problems with and a lot of beautiful trees. And it's something to see. For people that have not gone, I can't highly recommend enough a trip. And it is something that you need. I know Missionary Ventures, they're involved. Other people are involved. We've got a group that P4H is a group that I love, and they've been on this show before, ran by Bertrude Albert,
Dr. Bertrude of Florida.
From the University of Florida.
Yes, I follow them.
Yes. Yeah, and so Priscilla and Bertrude are dear friends, and they are doing a marvelous work there. They were both graduated as PhDs from Florida. So they're doing a great work. Have a heart for the nation. Bertrude is from Haiti originally, and they're just doing this awesome thing, and they've been on my program before, and I just love what they're doing, and I love how they're doing it. But they are always posting on their social media sites that news of what's going on, and just so many tragic things have happened this year with the assassination and these other problems that we've already talked about. But it is an area that we love. I want you to know that. And we pray for your country. And do you get to go back often?
I do. But thank you for mentioning that, though. And I do typically always encourage people to visit. There are many ways they can take part. As you mentioned before, organizations that are established that have people on the ground, or there are other groups organized if they don't feel safe. But there are ways to go to really discover Haiti, besides just what they see in the news or what's been propaganda, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yes, there may be risk, but overall, there is a big part of Haiti that has not been discovered. Not, I don't want to say not discovered, that has not been shown to the world, that the world doesn't know until you go
and
see.
Yeah.
So we do encourage that, you know, if go and see for yourself, but there are groups that can facilitate and organize that to make sure that you feel secure and go safely and travel back.
And I highly recommend it. Dr. Idla Benome is my guest today. We'll be back with him in a moment. Don't go away. This is Afternoons with Mike here on The Shepherd. What a joy it is to have Dr. Idla Benome in the studio today. And, you know, hearing his background in Haiti in segment one, I mentioned to him during the break, I want to make sure what I've shared from my memory, and that was a 1979 trip. It's been a long time ago that I took that trip. And I know a lot of changes have happened since that day. But you are so right when you say that Haiti is one beautiful island. And it's paradise. It's what people, I think, would think of paradise when they're there and see it. And my day, I still think back to that wonderful day of going swimming, and I went actually snorkeling in that cove. Oh, it was the best snorkeling I've ever done. So you came over when you were 8, and your dad spent some time in the States, as it was anyway, but you said that he was not in medicine. He was a tailor. Tell us about that.
Yes, he was. So I found out when I came here, he works in the field, and then in the evening, his trade was tailor. My clothes to school were homemade. Tailor-made.
That's better. Yes, sounds much better.
Yes, yes. So until a couple of years later when the industry started shifting, then it was no longer profitable to tailor, which is to sew and do seamstress for the ladies, if you will. So then he shifts to working regularly. But yes, he's a tailor by trade, and then a farmer back in Haiti, but also living life through tailoring and farming.
Now, when you landed in the United States, was it in Central Florida?
South Florida. Actually, my dad, when he first came, he lived in New York with his siblings, realized New York was not the lifestyle he wanted to have for us. It was too cold, and the lifestyle is one where we said, dog eat dogs, cat is out. So he's like, nope, came back to Florida. He lived in Miami for a little bit and then moved to a small town called Immokalee. Immokalee is Southwest Florida, between Naples and Fort Myers.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful area.
Yes, yes, farm town. So that's where we were raised.
Mm-hmm.
When we came, my sister and I was young. I didn't know any better. Just knew that, hey, I'm in a different country. It was cold. I remember we step outside and I'm like, wow, it's freezing cold. We came back inside. But to me, it was, I'm in a new area, and we took it one shot at a time at that moment.
Mm-hmm. There's a huge difference in New York weather and what you had experienced in Haiti. All the difference in the world.
Yes. But I didn't make it in New York, though. He did. But we came here and live in Southwest Florida. But
so you thought South Florida was cold?
It was cold. Now, there's been weather changes, but at that time, it was cold.
I'm dumbfounded at that. I knew, now, depending on where you are in Haiti, of course, if you're in Florida, air conditioning makes it cold for me.
It does.
But that's enjoyable, and I like that. Where was it in your mind? How early on was it sown in your mind to become a doctor?
I knew earlier on I wanted to be in the medical field. I wasn't sure, because I can remember back even in Haiti when I have my uncles. We grew up in multi-family homes. And whenever he comes from work, you know, we'll put his shoes out. Hey, let me see your toes, pulling on them. So I used to say I was going to be a mechanic, but not knowing. But even in high school, I did firefighter, first responder, volunteer work. And just that's the passion. I have a heart of service. So all my endeavors have been in the service industry.
Mm-hmm.
But once I got into high school, looking into college, and I started looking at the requirements, I was like, wow, okay. I didn't want to set myself for failure. I realized medical school would be 12 years. And I said, nah, I didn't know what the rush was, but I didn't want to do 12 years. But that passion was still there. As I went through college, discovering, realizing, oh, there's this thing that I can do within the medical field. So I did recreational therapy. Recreation, using that as a therapeutic environment, mm-hmm. where if you've had a stroke or whatever it may be, how can we adapt your art or the very thing that you love that you can still do it?
Mm-hmm.
So from there, I'm like, well, okay, well, I need something more. I wanted to challenge myself, and at the same time, too, I wanted more. And come through, go back again and review, realize, okay, well, I can still go to medical school. I can do this, I can do that. But then there was that fear, a fear to fail. But also, I knew my strengths and weaknesses. As I was just talking earlier, mm-hmm. and saying that, you know, science, math is not my strong suit. But all those requirements, prerequisites, they required that.
So yeah, you have to. If you're going to be a doctor, you're going to have to get past all of that.
Yes, you have. But through all that, I realized within time, your season changes, you develop, you mature. So that happened with me. And then the confidence came, but also God's blessing. I was able to graduate college with recreational therapy. I attended the University of Florida. I'm a Gator.
Go Gator.
Go Gators.
Go Gators. Yeah.
You know, and then after that, I'm like, well, I would like to work for myself. Now, the field of recreational therapy at that time was not well respected, if you will. There's a lot of challenges. And then, of course, it was not reimbursable by insurance. So eventually it becomes short-lived. Then I look back at my transcript. I'm like, well, what else can I do? What can I do with the credits that I have now, with mm-hmm. the expense that I have now? Where can I go? And I started looking at schools and realizing I have all my requirements. I have all the prerequisites for physical therapy.
And at DPT.
DPT. Mm-hmm. And I looked at a couple of schools. I applied to three. Two of them said, hell no, you got to finish your courses first before you attend. I called the Medical College of Georgia in Augusta. Well, I didn't call. I sent the application in. And they said, hey, finish this course this summer. Come on board. I said, thank you. And I made it there. Did my master's at Medical College of Georgia, which is Georgia State University now, I believe, in Augusta, Georgia. And then subsequently came back to Florida and did my doctorate at Nova Southeastern. Southeastern down in Fort Lauderdale. So the passion, the service heart is there. For me, it's more of helping to help improve, empower. And that's where I guess I thrive to be able to see the change in people's lives. I'm not sure if you know Mark. I had an opportunity to meet with him, and he said, you know,
Mark Goldstein?
Mark Goldstein.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. Know him well. Yes. Yeah.
He said, your ministry, this is your ministry. I'm like, yeah, you're right. I never thought about it that way. That is my ministry. But he said, but your ministry is to lay hands. I'm like, oh, I didn't think about it that way. You know, yeah. I would dare say, hey, I lay hands on people. But come to realize, you're right. That is my ministry.
Yeah.
I lay hands and empower and strengthen individuals to strengthen their life and help them love their lives and enjoy the quality of life that they should.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the passion, that's the drive, and I've been blessed, and I receive it.
That's wonderful. And Mark has that gifting of really encouraging people to accept where they are.
Yes.
and not always feel that what they're doing is somehow not ministry, because
right.
It is ministry.
It is.
Marketplace ministry is very critical.
It is.
I just think about Paul when he was there during those 3 years of working as a tent maker, and my goodness, he could have not done that. He could have lived differently, but he chose to serve the Lord while serving.
While serving.
And that's what you're doing.
Yes, it is.
You're not making temps, you're laying hands.
Laying hands, encouraging, and just helping people change their lives.
Yeah, that's really wonderful. How was it that you were able to live your faith out while you were in college? Because going to college can be a big shock to anyone, someone who was not raised, let's say, from the very beginning in the United States, even those like yourself. You were 8 when you moved in. You had a little bit of a foundation that would be a little different than the American scene. But for anyone, college can be a difficult season.
It could. And I have to say, it starts from home. The foundation has to start from home. I know for us, growing up, even my dad, he didn't used to go to church. But he knew about church, and he made sure that, hey, it's Sunday. Why are you guys not in church? What are you guys doing home? And I'm like, you're not going. But he made sure that every Sunday, we went to church with the neighbors. So that instilled that in us. Not that he didn't believe. He believed. He just wasn't a regular church attendee. So he made sure that we surround ourselves with those who believe it, with believers, but also at the same time to, we said a village, it takes a village to raise a kid. So he believed in that. And so to that point for us, that instilled that fear or revealed him, if you will, to make sure that whatever we do, we kept that alignment. Now for me, when I went to school, there's always been opportunities where we have a group of college students who were believers that were doing Bible studies or just hanging around but speaking the word. Although there are times you're like, hey, I don't want to be there. I just want to be home or do other things. But yet you still had that environment that kept, that planted that seed.
Mm-hmm.
So I was still connected. And that kept the connection to where yourself, so you didn't get discouraged or get pulled offside or whatnot. So again, it starts from home to have that foundation. But again, you have yourself, surround yourself with positive people. But yet you as the individual, you have to have determination. You have to have the boundaries. You have to have that self-will, if you will, and follow that.
When you look back to those years at UF, what were your favorite things about Gainesville?
Cultural.
Cultural.
I was surprised.
I think people are surprised when they first move there.
I was surprised.
How much there is to do.
Yes, because coming from Immokalee, small town, immigrant town, young Haitian, we're have an accent, deal with, I would say, insecurities or lack of confidence. So here I am, first time away from home in a big environment. So when I went there and we saw the set, and I see all these different groups there expressing their culture, expressing their language, I was like, wow. So I felt welcome.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had the
You didn't feel like an outsider.
I didn't feel like an outsider. Mm-hmm. So that to me was a difference for me. And till today, I said, you know what? UF set the standards.
Yeah. You know, I love that area. My my youngest three kids all graduated from UF. And so my wife and I have been able to spend many, many hours on that campus. And we love that campus. We love the Gainesville area in general. But you're right. There is so much to go. There's so much to learn, even away from UF, all of the different centers that that are there and the things to explore.
Yes.
It's a never ending adventure.
Yes. Yeah. There's opportunities to make sure that one does not feel isolated. You can belong. But again, it goes to the individual to follow that path and seek those guidance. But at the same time, walk that walk, be responsible.
So when you graduated, where did you head next?
After I left Gainesville, I went to Melbourne, Palm Bay. I had an internship there. I stayed there for a little bit. And then, thank God, I was offered a position after the internship. Stayed there. And then went back to Gainesville.
Oh, did you?
I did. I moved back to Gainesville and worked for a couple of years. And from there, that's when I decided to further my education and went back to, when I went back, went to Georgia for graduate school.
Were you working in the SHAN system? The UF?
No. I did not work in Shands. I work at one of the skilled nursing facilities, and then I work for DCF at Takachali with individual with developmental disabilities, whether it was autistic, cerebral palsy, or multiple personalities that they had. So we use recreation to help, if you will, improve the lifestyle or behavior modification with those therapists out there.
So when you made the move for more education, that was to Georgia?
To Georgia.
And how long was that?
Georgia was 2.5 years, 3 years.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it. I wanted to stay there. Unfortunately, it didn't pan that way. So came back to Melbourne.
Okay.
And worked at Melbourne. Actually, yes, worked at Melbourne from there. And I realized, okay, now I want to develop. I want to go into entrepreneurship or have my own business, if you will. So from there, I worked for a year, and then after that year, I started doing consulting work till I gradually, eventually, pulled away and then opened up my own practice. From Melbourne back from,
So now you're back in Central Florida, but in the southwest part of Orlando, down around, not far from Universal and all of that, then.
Not at all. Close to the attractions.
Yeah, that's a great place to live. Cindy and I spent a day recently over at Universal, and we had a blast. I rode every roller coaster they had there. It was crazy.
Even at Universal, it's good. I guess this is a tidbit. You can go there late in the evening, enjoy the river rides, or walk around and enjoy the water parks, or if you will, that's a great area to distress.
So. Mm-hmm. Fun place to go for even the night. That's right. Well, it is such a joy to have you here. And during the next segment, and in fact, setting up to that, this whole thing that you've actually got to do some of the recreational therapy, even after some of your practice going into becoming a DPT.
Yes.
I'd love to know what your thoughts are about how all of the impact of the coronavirus has had. What has that done to your practice?
Well, there's two sides. Earlier on, because of uncertainty, there was a decline because, again, we're following precautions and monitoring what's going on. But the other part of it was that began to develop or create a gap because we are human and we love human contact, human interaction.
Mm, we need it.
We do need it. So that became evident that, you know, as much as we could say, hey, I'm a loner, I don't need anybody. But at the core, when those emotions are aside, you realize you can't live life by yourself. You do need people. So what I realized, even when we shifted to telemedicine or telerehab, patients were having difficulty. They didn't like it as much. And they opted to come in. I said, hey, we do what we need to do, but we come in. But also, too, I treat a lot of, I'd say, mainly geriatrics, elderly patients,
mm-hmm.
that interaction they get, or if they live alone, is with a healthcare provider. With my field as a physical therapist, it's very intimate. We touch people. And some of those individuals, that's the only time they get touched.
Because their family couldn't even come to see them during the lockdown.
Correct.
And beyond the lockdown.
Correct.
For a long time. So this is crazy.
Yeah. So you have people developing, I don't want to say develop depression, but yet mm-hmm. just that nested and fear. And you have someone that to talk to, at least see and be touched and be guided. It does something to your soul. So for us, it was a decline, but then it kind of leveled out for us. Mm-hmm. And I'm grateful.
Dr. Idla Benome is my guest today. We're going to be back with him for one more segment. This is The Shepherd. Back for one more segment with Dr. Idla Benome. You know, you're a physical therapist. I hurt my knee last summer, and I've already had one complete knee replacement.
Wow.
And I thought it was going to be the time for the same thing in the other knee. And fortunately, that one healed up, and I haven't had to do that. But this is something that a lot of people don't realize, that the benefits of physical therapy can actually help them not only be able to not have pain, but to extend the ability to not have to have surgery for such things.
Correct.
If they were to take advantage of that.
Of course, of course. So one of the analogies I like to use and said is, if you imagine you have a river that is still, what happens?
Stagnates.
It stagnates, and you see mold, you see other things develop. The body is very similar. So our profession as physical therapists, we are movement specialists. So we promote movement and exercise to keep your body moving. The moment you stop, everything changes.
Mm-hmm. Now that's true with every part of your body, not just joints.
Perfect.
That's also true with all of your organs as well.
Brain, your organs, yes.
So explain, if you will, the benefit of that. Then we'll move back to the joints again, because mm-hmm. I think most people, when they think of physical therapy, they're thinking of joint movement, arm, elbow, knee, ankle, etc. But there's a lot of that inside.
It is. And physical therapy is based on prevention. However, many people come to us after the injury. But if you would be active, and I'll say mobilized, if you will, that has a lot of benefits. Okay. Because as you move, you have cellular activities that are happening. But it keeps your body fresh. It keeps your body in a state of, I'll say mobility again, because the muscles, the joints, even your organs, you have your heart pumping, okay? It's pumping so that blood can flow. You get new oxygenated blood running through your veins, running through your arteries. That helps fuel the different organs, that allows the cells to develop, that allows you to grow and mature,
mm-hmm.
okay? So if you stop moving, if you decide not to move, and even with pain, the easiest thing to do is to stop moving when you have pain. The tendency is that, well, it's hurting, let me sit down, let me not move. That couldn't be farther from the truth, because you want to move. And by moving again, you're moving those irritants that's causing the pain to get new oxygenated blood to the area to help revitalize and help get rid of those bad cells, if you will, to help eliminate your pain, help eliminate the inflammation.
Now, I heard years ago, and I'd love you to weigh in on this, that sweating is really important to the body's functions. I mean, people need to work. People need to move to the point that they perspire, because a lot of chemicals that are inside the body, they need to get out through the pores, and they just rather, if you don't exercise, you don't sweat, they stay inside. That's dangerous.
So, you know, every function we have has benefits. Yeah, because just as you ingest, you have to expel nutrients, but the waste product.
Mm-hmm, okay? Sure.
So the same way you drink water, you urinate. The same way that as you perspire, that perspiration is getting sweat out of your body, but at the same time too, that sweat is helping wash away. So that's why you have to stay hydrated, because your body is pretty much water.
Isn't it true that most people are dehydrated and
yes.
they don't know it?
I'm guilty of it too. But it's retraining yourself, conditioning yourself to do the right thing, because by the time that the body manifests the symptoms, it's already too late.
From your perspective, doctor, what would be the right amount of water? that a person needs to take in every day?
So if you look at your body weight, I'll say take that into ounces. So if you weigh 100 pounds, let's say drink 100 ounces.
Okay.
So keep it that simple. But typically the rule of thumb, if you do 16 ounce bottles of water a day, that helps. Now, there's different individuals. If you have different body size, different activity level, the environment you're working in, you have to consider all that as well. If you perspire a lot more, then you want to make sure you intake more as well. Now, if you spend your day working in the building in terms of air conditioning, you're not sweating much, you're not perspiring much. If you have a sedentary job, you still need to hydrate. You may not lose as much fluid compared to someone who's doing construction work out in the sun, walking, doing heavy labor. So that's proportionate. But overall, make it a point that you drink water, not just when you're thirsty. When you feel thirsty, it's already too late.
Right. You're already dehydrated. Yes. And if you're out in the sun, that becomes a really critical problem. Is it possible to drink too much water?
Your body will excrete it.
So it's not a worry.
I don't think it's a worry. Mm-hmm. Unless if you have different conditions that you're on food restriction by your primary, then yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But other than that, if you're a regular individual, there's no medical issues going on, drink as much as you can.
Okay.
But your body will excrete it if it's too much.
Now, there's something that I think is very clear. When you talk about being a moving specialist and one that teaches the importance of staying in motion, and the benefits to your long-term health are very well known in that. Yet we have a whole generation of young people, a couple of generations of young people that did not move and are not moving even to this day the way that my generation, because we were outside in the summertime, we didn't have televisions or videos the way they have today, or video games. We didn't have any of that stuff.
No.
And we were outside riding bikes, walking, running, playing baseball.
Yes.
What are your thoughts about today with young people?
It's missed. I think as parents, we need to help structure that. Yes, there is a change. It's a different generation. We need to embrace technology. I welcome that as well. But I think we can help balance that as well to make sure that physical part, the physical activity level is still involved. It's still there.
I think it's so critical. And I love what you said. You put it back in the court of the parents, because so many times a lot of parents are kind of leaving it all up to the kids. But they need to be much more involved themselves.
They need to be guided. And I understand, as parents, we're busy living life, providing, making sure we set up the environment for our kids. But we don't want to do the disservice as well and not create that balance for them, because that starts at that moment where you begin to impart onto them, hey, yes, if this is your passion, do it.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to develop in that. However, let's go ahead and try this as well, just to make sure you get that opportunity.
Now, we've talked about young people. We've talked about even older people. But there's one thing that is another benefit, and that is the emotional and perhaps even the mental health aspects that really are benefited when we exercise and when we're out doing something that is walking or running or whatever. Share about that for a moment.
Most symptoms that you have, most illness that you have, you can help manage it and regulate it through exercise. So if you think of high blood pressure, even depression, because as you engage in those activity level, your body starts to release different chemicals, different hormones that helps feed the brain and that helps fight those very same issues. So yes, it takes work. That's one of the hardest things for us to sell as physical therapy. You know, I tell patients, unfortunately, I don't prescribe medicine. I don't give injection, and I'm not a surgeon, I don't cut. However, my prescription is exercise. Mm-hmm. So you have to move to reverse this. It's a lifestyle. When you develop high blood pressure, it didn't suddenly happen. It was a series of events that happened, and then you develop that. The very same. To reverse it, there's a series of activities that you got to do. And if you, yes, you can take the medication, not to discredit that, but if you engage yourself in activity, intensity, you can manage it as well.
It's great advice, Dr. Idla Benome. And, you know, in the few moments that we have left, I'd like to turn our focus one more time back to Haiti, and not just Haiti, but other areas as well. As a believer, I believe that we're called to share our faith and to walk out our discipleship. And Jesus gave us those four areas in our own area in Acts chapter 1, in our Jerusalem, in our Judea, in Samaria, areas where we may not naturally want to go, mm-hmm. and then the ends of the earth. And when we think of the ends of the earth, we think of missions work, and you're doing, you're still one that has this affinity for your home country of Haiti. Yes. What are you seeing happen in the future from here in such work? And what, as one who came from another country, what are your thoughts about that?
I believe there's a change coming. You know, just as it says in the Bible, the first, maybe the last, and the last shall be the first. And I said, if Haiti is enduring all it's enduring now, it cannot stay like that. It will not stay like that. So I truly believe there's a change that's coming. We may not understand it. We may not be able to see it. But I think all this heartache, well, we call it heartache. It may not be. There's a lesson to be learned. I may not learn it today. It may not be in my generation. But I truly believe it's a setup. For a new beginning, for a reset, or there's a change coming. Mm. That's my belief, and I think many other fellow Haitians believe that as well. So for us, yes, we're praying, we're helping those we can, we're assisting however we can, but keeping the faith and the mindset that there is a change coming. And it says in the Bible as well, it rains on the just and the unjust. So this may be Haiti's season. Yes, it's a long season as we see it. However, we don't know what's coming.
Mm-hmm. When you think about the year that Haiti's just gone through with the president being assassinated and all, are you seeing any type of settling back into a good place, or is it still pretty unstable?
I would say it's, from what I'm hearing and gathering information, it's pretty unstable. Granted, yes, you have Haiti, the whole island. There's different parts in the island that, you know, may be stable, but around the core, there's still some, you know, unsettling issues that are going on. Now, will those change? How will they change? I think over time they will. But for the most part, there's still unsteadiness.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're praying for them. And again, thank you for sharing from your heart the way you have today. It's, to me, eye-opening about Haiti, and to hear it from an expert point of view, but one that was from there, one that still is very actively involved there. That's really helpful. Tell us how we can get in touch with you. If we have physical therapy needs, how can people find you?
Sure. Feel free to reach out to us directly at 321-369-9133, or visit us online at www.physical.com, West Orlando, and you'll be able to, we'll be able to assist you.
Now, there's got to be a story why you chose an F on that.
Well, I can't take credit for that. I'm part of a franchise. However, one of the initial founder is from the Netherlands.
And okay.
We spell physical therapy with the F.
Ah, there you go. Yes. I knew there had to be an answer. That's it. All right. It is a delight to have had you on the program today, Doctor. Dr. Idla Benome, you can enjoy his work and benefit from his practice by contacting him at the site that he's just given. And we thank you, sir, for your thoughts and your work for the great people of Haiti as well. Thank you.
Well, thank you for having me. Let me mention, too, I'm also part of the Haitian Chamber, and we do help, and we are trying to keep the relief effort going. So if anybody's looking to donate or share as well, feel free to reach out to the Haitian Chamber, and we have partners that we've collaborate with that will be able to make sure their donation or however they can assist, whether it's here or in Haiti, they can partner with those as well.
That's really
again,
great.
Thank
to
you
know.
For having me. Appreciate the opportunity.
Oh, it's been great to have you on the program. As always, friends, it's great to have you here as well. We'll see you next time here on the Shepherd Radio Network.
Afternoons with Mike, brought to you by U.S. Christian Chamber, National Conference, and Expo.